Hi, and welcome to the PodMag, the audio news magazine from Arts and Social Science at the Open University. I'm Karen Foley, and in this October edition, we're going to focus on new modules. But first, in our spotlight section, we take a look at just a few highlights from the range of media we've been working on. Autumn is always an exciting time in broadcasting. Look out for Sleuths, Spies and Sorcerers, Andrew Marr's Paperback Heroes, which is a three-part series on BBC Two. It takes an innovative and engaging approach to the worlds of genre fiction, which, like many genres of writing, is all about rules. This series will unpack the tried and tested formulae and uncover how our most popular novels actually work. There are also a range of MOOCs, massive open online courses on FutureLearn. The Open University are involved with a range of these, but one that's been very successful and is starting in early October is Challenging Wealth and Income Inequality, a four-week course that explores the concerns about raising generational and economic inequality in developed countries. If you haven't participated in a MOOC before, they're a great way to learn more with the support of a lead educator and a cohort of other learners. But there are also flexible ways to learn that you can pick up at any time. OpenLearn is the place to find all of this, and on Spotlight today there is Music and Its Media, which is a free 16-hour intermediate level course that examines some of the main ways in which music is transmitted. The course focuses on three examples of musical media that allow us to study music of the past: manuscripts of 16th century Belgium, prints of 18th century London, and recordings of 20th century America. On OpenLearn, there are also a range of box badged open courses that are in production for release this autumn. These are a great way to upskill, perhaps enhancing your employment skill sets. There are other box on OpenLearn that are also useful if you're returning to study or you want to brush up on English and math skills. But these are the new ones to keep an eye out for this autumn: the Digital Scholar, Introduction to Cybersecurity, Succeeding in Postgraduate Study, Working in the Voluntary Sector, Commercial Communication and Negotiation, Resilience and Flexibility, Understanding Autism, Understanding Your Sector, Leadership and Followership, and finally, Working in Diverse Teams. So now we return to the theme of the PodMag, and there is so much happening with module production at the moment, and there are lots of exciting new qualifications and modules that are being developed. Some of these are now available and others are still in production. To give you a flavour of some of the modules, I've interviewed Paul Lawrence about his Level 2 History module, Helen Kay about the Third Level Psychology Core module that's in its first presentation, and Katrina Havard about a Third Level Interdisciplinary module that's still in production. We're deep in production on a brand new Level 2 History module. Paul Lawrence, the module chair, has some really innovative ideas about how history can be brought to life for the students studying this module, and I managed to get some time in his busy schedule to see how it's all coming together. Paul Lawrence, thank you so much for talking to me today about A225. What is the title of your module?
The module's title is The British Isles and the Modern World, 1789 to 1914.
And when is this going to be released for students?
To be October 2017, so we're just in the heat of the production process.
Now, what are you most excited about in terms of this module? There's so many fascinating areas within that period, but broadly speaking, what's it all about?
Well, we're very much seeing this. The two terminal dates of the course are bracketed by the French Revolution at the early end and the start of the First World War at the second end. And what we really see there is the birth of the modern world, the Britain we know today. So 1789, you have the vast bulk of the population living in the countryside and a kind of very patriarchal, semi-feudal system, the remnants of it at least. By the time you get to 1914, you have electric lights, cars, the telephone. It's really that massive transition that happens in Britain across that period.
And even though this is history, obviously there's a very subjective aspect to it. How are you giving students a flavour of what life was like at the time?
Well, one of the things we really try and do throughout the course is access at as many points as possible individual testimony, individual stories, the lives of ordinary people. So while we do cover the Industrial Revolution, the big shifts in politics. This is very much also interrogated from the angle of what was happening to ordinary people? How did this feel from their point of view?
And so you're looking at different sources, aren't you, to explore some of those areas. Can you tell us about that?
Well, you know, for example, in one of the first blocks, we're talking about industrialisation, the way in which the shift from the bulk of the population working in farming to far more people working in factories and workshops. But we're looking at, one of the ways we look at is two diary entries. So we have a diary entry from an aristocratic lady who's travelling the potteries, Stoke-on-Trent, and commenting from her point of view on all the smoke and smut kind of spoiling the countryside. But then equally we have a diary, a very unusual diary actually, written by a publican's daughter in London. So someone who's involved in the pub trade in the 1810s. How did it seem to them?
And what do you think students might enjoy most from this module?
I think one of the things that I think I've been struck by is the massive diversity of topic, of experience, of source. So, for example, a student who is really interested in politics, there's plenty in there about how the working class came to assert their rights to kind of political voice, demonstrations, protests. But equally, if you're interested in daily life, there's plenty on what it was like, you know, in the world of work, or in, you know, what the home looked like in 1910 and how that compared to what a home looked like in 1810. So we cover a very, very broad range, I think, will interest a lot of students.
And typically, which pathways might students be on who come into contact with this module? Are they doing history? Are they doing open degrees? What sorts of students might you expect to come to it?
I think any, really. I mean, obviously, with the open degree, they could access that. With it, we have a history name degree. Some of those will be doing those. The BA Humanities, it's also a feature of that. So any of the kind of broad arts and humanities pathways, I think it would be appropriate for.
Thank you, Paul. That's a really, really interesting overview of the module. I look forward to it coming out.
Thank you.
Those of you in psychology are probably aware that there have been changes to many modules, and we now see the launch of the core third level module, DE300. What's interesting about this is that it offers students the chance to undertake their own supervised research, as well as having the chance to specialise in one methodological area. So to fill us in, I caught up with module chair Helen Kay. Helen Kay, you're the module chair for DE300. Now, this is a very new and exciting module for psychology students. It's a main piece of research work. So can you tell us what you're most excited about now that this module's going live?
I think seeing how the students get on with their project. It's the first time that students have been able to have a say in which method they use to do their project. It's their idea. Their tutors are supporting them, as supervisors would support them, rather than trying to teach them bit by bit all the time. And also just seeing how the students adapt to the new models. So they're learning about the core areas of psychology, all of the, you know, cognitive, biological, social, all of them, in specialist forums. So they're learning the advanced stuff from specialists in those areas, and they're also being supervised while doing their research.
So I guess it gives them more of a flavour about what postgraduate work might look like, because they're having a supervisor and they're doing an independent project. Can you tell us a bit about the scope in terms of what project students might be able to do?
The scope's really wide. They could choose from all of the topics that they've covered in at level 2, either on DE200 or in DSE 212. They can look at the topics that they've covered, say, in social psychology, in cognitive psychology. They can't actually experiment or study children, but they can look at people's attitudes, the way children learn, for example. So it's a really wide range of stuff.
And can you tell us a bit about how that process works in terms of the overall module? Do students need to decide what they want to do at the very start?
Before they even start the module, students give us their preference for which method they'd like to use, and that means that we can allocate them to a tutor who's got expertise in that method. They're just starting the module now on Saturday, and they're going to have start a conversation with their tutor right from the start about what they're actually going to do, devising their research question, doing their literature search, thinking about what method they're going to use, what procedures they're going to use. And then come January, February, we expect them to have a nice, well-developed project proposal. And then after that, they actually do their study. They collect their data, they analyse their data, they report their data.
Now, you've mentioned this idea of supervision and that the tutors are allocated to the students, and I guess the tutors are specialists within those methodological areas.
Yeah.
So how does that relationship work then in terms of the taught aspects and the supervision aspects? Like, how do the students get on with the ALs? What sort of happens in that space?
Well, they've got the best of both worlds, in a way, because they've got a one-to-one relationship with their supervisor. In fact, they've got a forum that they share solely with their supervisor, tutor. But on the other hand, for their specialist teaching, they go into a cluster which is staffed by experts in core subjects. So people who've got expertise in cognitive psychology and biological psychology will tutor them in those subjects and support them through their assessment of those subjects. Then they'll be taught by developmental psychologists, social psychologists, who will support them in assessment of those subjects too.
And what can students most look forward to, aside from obviously having a wonderful choice of project to work on and a very innovative way of doing so, what do you think students are most going to get out of this module?
I think actually investigating psychology. The module's called Investigating Psychology 3, the third module in the series, and this is where they actually get to do it themselves. So they actually do some psychology.
I'm sure students are really going to look forward to it. Thank you very much, Helen Kay.
Okay, thanks.
If you're a student studying DE 300 and you'd like to tell us how it's going for you, please drop me a line, podmag@open.ac.uk, and we can arrange a short phone interview. Or if there's a news story you'd like to include, please do get in touch. In our final interview, I spoke to Katrina Havard, who's in the process of editing a book, Mad or Bad, that forms a core component of the new third level module, DE 310. Katrina Havard, you're working on DD 310, which is Forensic and Counselling Psychology, and this is due for release to students in October 2017. So you're nearing the end of module production. Can you tell us a little bit about how the module's shaping up?
It's actually shaping up really well. So at the moment, I am editing our book, which is called Mad or Bad. And so we've got all the chapters written. And at the moment, I've been reading through all of the different chapters and just making sure that they all fit together before we can send it off to the publisher. And that should be available autumn next year.
Now, this is an interesting idea because you're making a book that is available to the public as a book with Sage Publications, but it's also going to be a core part of the module material. You're also working with some of the academics at the Open University and a range of practitioners in a variety of settings to combine various different perspectives around forensic and counselling psychology. How are you working with those interdisciplinary approaches?
That's right. So we've got OU academics that are helping to write the book, and we've also got some external academics. So, for example, one of the chapters that I'm writing is looking at the historical perspective of mental health, prisons and forensic mental health, and I'm working with a historian. So she's bringing along her sort of historical side, and I'm using the psychological perspective. We've also worked with a counsellor from HMP Grendon, which is the only therapeutic prison in the UK.
Now, this will be really interesting to students, I guess, who are studying a whole range of qualifications, counselling, criminology, forensic psychology, etc. What are they going to enjoy most about the module?
Oh, gosh, that's a difficult question. We've tried to sort of cover all of our bases, so we've got a lot of things that people who are studying the counselling psychology qualification will find fascinating, because we're looking at different types of therapy like CBT, mindfulness therapy, just to name a couple, and seeing how they can be used in the forensic setting and obviously in the therapeutic setting. But then people that are studying the forensic psychology degree will also find it fascinating, because all of the different applied aspects are all looking at forensic settings as well as therapeutic settings.
It sounds so interesting in terms of content, and I want to touch on the idea of assessment also, because at level three you were often looking at very different, more complex kinds of tasks. And in psychology, for example, we've spoken to Helen Kay earlier about the project work that people will be doing. So what might students expect from the assessment in this module?
So that's a really good question. So we actually had a poll on our Mad or Bad website to see whether our students would like to do either an EMA, sort of more of a project type end of module assessment, or whether they'd like to do an exam. And there was a unanimous decision that it was an EMA that people wanted to do and not an exam. So that's what we're going to do.
So you've delivered on what the public have said.
Yes, that's excellent. Right.
You're also asking people for various ideas within this forum, though, aren't you? What have you taken up and integrated into the module that students have wanted?
So one of them obviously was not to have an exam, but to have an end of module assessment. We were also looking at sort of different ways to do collaborative learning and sort of collaborative exercises. So we're going to try and incorporate those into the module as well.
It sounds really, really interesting. I'm sure students are going to really enjoy it, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it coming out at the end of next year. Katrina Havard, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That is all we have time for in this edition. Bye for now, and thanks for listening.